cortes y demás se han demostrado no solo injustas, o sea, no solo democráticas, históricos, Latinoamérica es un gran ejemplo de ello, no liberales pueda salir de la crisis.
Dado al gobierno, donde también se pide una reducción de la ayuda al desempleo y otras medidas de recorte del gasto público. En las últimas negociaciones sobre materia laboral o de pensiones, donde participan gobierno, patronal y sindicatos, ha sido una constante el descontento de estos últimos, así como la pública aprobación de los empresarios, lo que ha contribuido a generar cierta alarma social entre la población próxima a la edad de jubilarse. Guillermo Magariño, Telesur, Madrid.
En más noticias sobre luchas obreras, los educadores mexicanos continúan con su repudio a las reformas neoliberales que pretende imponer el proestadounidense presidente Enrique Peña Nieto. Escuchemos el reporte de Jorge Fita, seguido de Verónica Insausti, desde la casa de Tupac Amaru. Ella nos hablará de otra lucha obrera de grandes dimensiones.
Exigen derecho de réplica. Son maestros mexicanos pertenecientes a la Coordinadora Nacional de Trabajadores de la Educación que esta mañana rodearon las instalaciones de las dos televisoras con más audiencia de México, el llamado duopolio Televisa y TV Azteca. Denuncian que dicho grupo mediático tergiversa su lucha contra la reforma en materia educativa.
En realidad el pueblo mexicano desconoce la reforma, y si la conociera no la aceptaría, porque es totalmente lesiva al derecho a la educación pública.
Desde febrero los docentes han tomado las calles con masivas movilizaciones. Denuncian que la enmienda constitucional aprobada elude los graves problemas del sistema educativo.
Se revisen entonces los planes, los programas, el modelo educativo, que se revise la infraestructura, el mantenimiento, el equipo, que se tome en cuenta las diversidades económicas, culturales, sociales de los pueblos.
Disconformes, los educadores acudieron hasta la capital, el Distrito Federal, para dialogar con el gobierno. La respuesta llegó el 13 de septiembre con el desalojo a la fuerza del campamento que mantuvieron durante 3 meses en el Zócalo.
En la aplicación de la reforma educativa no habrá marcha atrás. Al contrario, tenemos que avanzar con mayor celeridad.
Lejos del desgaste, el movimiento magisterial parece fortalecerse mientras se extiende el conflicto.
De los 32 estados que hay en la República, en 26 ha habido protestas, manifestaciones. De las 52 secciones sindicales, en 36 de ellas ha habido paros de escuelas. Los padres de familia están tomando las escuelas porque están viendo que también a ellos les afecta.
Y es que con la aplicación de la nueva normativa serán los tutores quienes deban hacerse cargo de parte del costo de funcionamiento de los centros educativos.
En estos momentos los dos protagonistas de este conflicto en torno al sistema educativo en México parece que no acercan las posturas. Por una parte, el gobierno federal ha reiterado, como escuchábamos en esta nota que preparamos, que la reforma educativa no tiene marcha atrás y que comenzará a aplicarse de manera pormenorizada. Por otra parte, los maestros aglutinados en la Coordinadora Nacional de Trabajadores de la Educación ya han subrayado que no van a acatar esta normativa en sus centros educativos. Llaman a los padres de familia y también a estudiantes a que se sumen a esta movilización, a esta lucha que afirman es por la defensa de la educación pública en el país. Además, los docentes, Rey y Tatiana, ya han dado un paso más, han comenzado la lucha en el terreno jurídico. Hay más de 3.000 amparos en la Corte de Justicia Federal y se espera que dictaminen en torno a los puntos de las leyes secundarias que vertebran esta reforma educativa. El día de mañana volverá a haber una manifestación aquí, en la capital del país, el Distrito Federal. Estará protagonizada por el Magisterio, por la Coordinadora Nacional y también por padres de familia y por estudiantes que se han sumado a esta causa aquí en la capital. Y como escuchábamos, ya esta lucha es a nivel nacional. Hay más de 23 entidades federativas donde se replican estas movilizaciones. Se espera que vuelvan a haber tomas simbólicas de lugares como hemos estado viendo a lo largo de estas semanas, que son Petróleos Mexicanos, que son las televisoras, casetas de autopistas, lugares donde los docentes afirman que es necesario estar para que de alguna manera se socialice y se llegue al fondo de lo que realmente supone para México esta reforma educativa.
Esta es una de las pocas guarderías que existen en Perú para hijos de trabajadoras del hogar. Es autogestionaria y, a diferencia de otras cunas jardín, aquí los niños se quedan todo el tiempo mientras que la madre debe trabajar, siempre más de 8 horas.
nuestros derechos no se respetan, que somos invisibilizadas como trabajadoras del hogar, que muchas veces si salimos embarazadas nos despiden. En el mundo es así, ¿no? Y nos están considerando como que nuestro trabajo es el último trabajo y que si uno trabaja en su casa ellos pueden hacer con nosotros lo que les da la gana, ¿no?
El Sindicato Nacional de Trabajadoras del Hogar realizó varias actividades de incidencia política en el marco de cumplir el 7º aniversario en lucha por sus derechos laborales.
Como mujeres y como trabajadoras exigimos al gobierno peruano que cumpla la promesa de ratificar este convenio 189 que protege a gran cantidad de mujeres trabajadoras como son las trabajadoras del hogar.
También se realizó en Lima un seminario internacional sobre trabajo doméstico, donde especialistas en el tema explicaron por qué es tan difícil que la Organización Internacional del Trabajo exigiera a los estados el cumplimiento del convenio 189, referido a las normas laborales mínimas para los trabajadores y trabajadoras del hogar.
Es una situación complicada porque ellas suelen ser las más pobres entre las mujeres y además se agrava con la condición de inmigrante. Tendrían que tener los mismos derechos que cualquier trabajador, pero el límite económico lo pone la capacidad del propio hogar y las trabajadoras en muchos casos saben que tienen que elegir entre peores condiciones o no tener ese empleo, y eso es lo que hace muy difícil para la OIT ser realmente exigente en que se cumplan las condiciones de los salarios mínimos.
Organizaciones de trabajo doméstico de varios países se reunirán el próximo 26 de octubre en Uruguay para fundar la Federación Mundial de Trabajadores y Trabajadoras del Hogar, con el fin de presionar a los gobiernos para que el convenio 189 de la OIT sea ratificado en todo el mundo. Verónica Insausti, Telesur, Perú.
En Colombia, los hombres y mujeres de la nación sudamericana siguen adelante construyendo la paz. Vladimir Carrillo nos informa sobre algunos cambios sustanciales esta semana.
Dos informaciones agitan en este momento la agenda noticiosa del país. El primero, lo que tiene que ver con la paz, con la plenaria del Senado de la República de Colombia, acaba de aprobar la propuesta del referendo. Recordemos que este referendo fue convocado por el gobierno para validar desde las urnas los acuerdos que se lleguen en la mesa de negociaciones de La Habana. Aquí el Senado de la República dijo, cuando se aprobó este referendo, que se convocará para las elecciones que se van a realizar en el mes de marzo y de mayo. No se sabe en cuál de las dos los colombianos votarán. Además, para elegir los legisladores o el presidente también votarán para aprobar o no los temas acordados en la agenda de La Habana. La Corte Constitucional, con una votación de 5-4 votos, tumbó el fuero, o la ampliación, mejor, del fuero penal militar. De acuerdo a la corporación, fueron razones de trámite las que contemplaron en su sentencia, que dejan sin pie esta ampliación de fuero penal militar, que recordemos que le daba a la justicia penal militar la prerrogativa de investigar a los mismos militares, pero acá no se tumbó por formas de fondo, sino por ese trámite que se habría hecho ante el legislativo colombiano. Noticia importante y que tiene que también ver con la paz, porque de algún modo se había dicho que este fuero militar, tal como estaba aprobado, pues iba en contra de esto. Paz y que más le apuntaban a la guerra.
Aquí concluye esta edición del informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide de tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Y otros programas del informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
welcome to Bathrob Spears Broadsides, the streaming version on October 24th, 2013. A bit tired this evening, so bear with me. My name is Robert Norris, and this is a show that concerns itself with, tonight anyway, with the voices of poor people on the street and updates on protests against the laws that criminalize artists, musicians, and poor people on the street. There was a demonstration today, quite successful in terms of the number of people who turned out and the positive impact, no police harassment or very little, and lots of colorful commentary back and forth. People spoke their minds and chalked their minds as well on the sidewalk, to the consternation of some. And that was all in front of Forever 21, with an eye to protesting the shrinking, snatched sidewalks. Compliments of Julie Hendy and the Santa Cruz City Council. Hendy is the staff person who, along with Scott Collins, is responsible for creating and presenting this piece of crap that the City Council rubber-stamped a month ago now. And a lot of people were, almost everyone I talked to, was concerned about opposing it. The demonstration was created by Phil Posner. Micah Posner's dad. He's a city council member. Not Phil, but Micah. And we're not going to start there, though. We're going to start back a bit, because there were interviews that I wasn't able to play that I want to be able to get to, and I'm going to go straight to them now. That happened starting on Saturday. That would be Saturday the 19th, I guess. So, just quickly, if you want to call in during the show, because, for example, you perhaps read some of my online comments on Sentinel articles around the Task Force meeting last night. That's the more properly known as the Task Force on Public Safety, where I showed up with a poster or two and a bunch of flyers, and then later left my comments online on the Sentinel article written by Shanna McCord. You're welcome to call in. Call-in number here is 427-3772. You're welcome to call in if you have any thoughts on updates or updates on things that are happening in Santa Cruz, particularly having to do with poor people and poor people outside, although other issues are not barred. Just I tend to segue back into the unhoused, houseless street folks, people outside. So I want to remind you again, we are looking for a transmitter site, and when we find one, we will be broadcasting at you. But if we don't find one, we may even have to stop streaming. So keep your ears open, keep your eyes open, let us know if you see one. Any place downtown that has a tall tree or a second story could be the answer to our problems. So give us a shout at the website, freakradio.org. And give us a call in on my show if you have any thoughts on what's going on. If you're listening to this show on the 24th of October, 2013, then it's a live show. Otherwise, you're listening to a taped show. So with that said, let's check out a few interviews. These are from the Food Now Bombs meal on Saturday, October 19th, which happens in front of the post office downtown at 4 o'clock. I think I showed up a bit later, but let's listen in. And I'm hoping very soon we'll hear something to listen in to. Sounds like we may have a technical problem, which I will remedy hopefully very quickly, and we'll see if that works. Let's see how we're doing with this here. Well, we're having similar problems. Let's Let's take a musical break, and here's a little from a street performer who was one of the main organizers of the protest today on Pacific Avenue against the Thou Shalt Not Perform on Sidewalks Except in Teeny Tiny Boxes on raised platforms with large distances between yourself and other performers, and essentially relegating you to 5% of the sidewalks. Actually less, but 5% and less. That sounds rougher than I thought it would be, but here, let's turn back to the unsnarled tape from October 19th. And we're listening to Corkscrew Tony, who was talking about his stay-away order from City Hall because he was there with a corkscrew, which the city authorities construed as a weapon. And I think I've interviewed him about this issue before, so we only touch on it briefly.
Stay-away order up. Today, by the way, is October 19th. We're at the Food Not Bombs meal.
I'll be back with another corkscrew.
As you intend not to be intimidated by their anti-corkscrew activity?
Well, I don't want them to look at my picnic basket or my cooler.
I see. So you, again, it's a matter of search and seizure for you?
I think it's search everything as long as they use a rubber glove.
They usually do. We've been talking with...
Tony, corkscrew.
Thank you, corkscrew, Tony. We're talking with
Paul Bernardino.
And Paul, you're sampling the fare here at the Food Not Bombs meal. I see salad and veggies and looks like apple pie on your plate.
Well, I highly commend Food Not Bombs because their message is as clear and needed as their delicious vegetarian food. And I have been trying to get other soup kitchens and free food places to be followed the good example of Food Not Bombs to go vegetarian, but the other soup kitchens that I've been to and talked with their leaders and soup kitchens in San Francisco, they adamantly refuse, militantly refuse to have anything to do with anything vegetarian.
I see. They're big animal killers from way back.
I noticed that the more they the people who really are militantly insist on killing animals are military oriented and bombs away types.
Hey man, I'm a hamburger lover. You calling me a general?
Well, no, in general, I'm talking in general terms. In general, terms.
General, is that a little pun you're making?
The 4-star general. Yeah, I mean, I'm finding this to be really like today. Or was it yesterday? I was at a Holy Cross, and they're against any type of vegetarian blueberry or anything vegetarian, although they serve vegetable. You know, they're a contradiction. I said, well, the meat is not good for you, and it's documented. It's on the internet. It's in libraries. It's in bookstores. But they.
Who did you speak to?
Holy Cross. The woman. I don't remember her name. But every food.
The soup kitchen down on Morris Street.
Holy Cross Food Pantry. Every soup kitchen. Every free sit-down dinner place that I go to. I'm on a crusade. And I pass out vegetarian pamphlets in large quantity, but maybe not the past few weeks because I'm busy as a tailor. I do custom tailoring. But I've noticed that every time one would go to a free soup kitchen place or wherever there's food distributed, like a pantry here in Santa Cruz.
Well, I catch your drift on this, Paul, and I hear that you're struggling with this campaign, but what else, what other observations do you have about the different food services in Santa Cruz? Anything, do you find that they're non-discriminatory, or do you find that food is varies in quality?
Santa Cruz has the best, the most and the best food, free food places anywhere I've encountered, anywhere in Northern California.
So do people flock to Santa Cruz for the food, as Take Back Santa Cruz would have us believe?
No, they don't necessarily. It's sort of like a kept secret. They don't really flock here, and so they are, that's the short answer. I'll give you the long answer later.
Yet they have the best food services. In fact, haven't you been organizing mobs of homeless people to come to Santa Cruz to sample the food and sleep in the streets and distribute needles throughout the city?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the needles, because the needle exchange, here's some very good people who are doing needle exchange.
That was closed down back in January.
Around here?
And the Barson Street area was closed down. I mean, they're still out at Emmeline outside the city.
The needle exchange is active in San Francisco with Reverend Rivers.
I'm not thinking about Santa Cruz. Are you spend most of your time here or San Francisco?
Most of my time here, and then on weekends I sometimes go up there and Berkeley, Oakland. But I have noticed that the people who distribute free food, soup kitchens, free food pantries, many of them really don't know or understand the plight of the homeless, hungry, down and out, and the destitute. They automatically think, their mentality is that give them any kind of food, they'll eat it. They're desperate. Just give them any unhealthy food. But fortunately, Food Not Bombs here gives very, very healthy food. And
let me change the subject here, that you are also sleeping outside.
No, I'm staying with a friend right now.
So you've become a law-abiding citizen.
Yes, I've always been, and law-abiding. Our government is not law-abiding.
I don't want to hear any attacks on Obama. We love him, you know.
Well, he is he's a war criminal. He belongs in jail with his four-star generals. They belong in jail. They are...
You don't like drones? What is your problem, son?
I just don't like my village and towns being bombed in the Middle East or whatever, and it's very, very... It's not nice. It's not nice.
Well, let's leave it there before you say something. It might cause me to have to, turn you in.
Obscene. You better cut this off. I might see something very obscene.
You already mentioned Obama's name. That's pretty much enough of a beginning. So we've been talking with
Paul Bernardino, the People's Investigation of 9/11.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay.
What's your name, sir? I see you in the middle of drinking something.
Dennis.
And Dennis, you're here at the Food Not Bombs table. I see some rather colorful little desserts over there. It looks like, what is it, strawberry shortcake or something?
Strawberry shortcake and an angel food cake.
What are you trying to rot the teeth of the entire homeless community?
Well, people need their
sweets,
carbs, you know. I mean, they need a little spike of energy there.
I see there is a salad bowl, as usual, heavily drenched in dressing.
Olive oil, omega-3, you know. It's good for you.
Various packages of crackers or salt, probably pepper. Looks like where's the beef?
Well, Daniel, you can tell us what we have today.
What kind of protein do you have for the protein-starved masses?
Eggplant.
I see.
And potatoes.
It's always frightening, the word
eggplant and potato salad.
It's not a protein, son. I don't know where you got your education in nutrition. Certainly it wasn't Beijing, I can tell you that.
Phytoprotein. You're familiar with phytoprotein?
I'm not.
Well, that's plants are made of protein, just like we are.
I see. Chlorophyll, that's sort of thing.
Well, chlorophyll is not a protein. It's an enzyme, whatever, you know. But
just testing you, you know. Well, let's make sure you're on the up and up.
Trying to get the record straight there. So
you're a man who's been involved in a number of other causes. I know that... you know, you've been involved in the Santa Cruz Coalition to ignore racial complaints. Then there's the American Civil Liberties lack of union. And then we have a number of groups. What's been going on?
Well, I just help out as best I can. And Santa Cruz Coalition, Community Coalition to Overcome Racism.
Conservation of Co-option?
No.
I mean, certainly not.
Everyone's doing their best to do what can be done.
And what exactly are they doing?
Well, we're sort of going through a period of
re-examination.
Re-examination, and there's been a big turnover, and we're looking for new funding sources
For new funding.
Well, you need a little bit of something.
You gotta have a little moolah
boolah. A little bit.
Takes money to make money, right?
Well, no, you need a little bit to grease the the rails
grease
or whatever.
The wheels.
The wheels.
With the big wheels, actually.
Yeah. Well,
they're kind of greasy already.
Yeah. No matter. We have plans for the future, and they will.
I was always glad to hear that there are many plans for the future.
Realizing soon.
Okay. Now, absolutely nothing specific is happening.
Well, there are specific things we have in mind.
Like what?
Well, we're very concerned about racial profiling and hope to serve as...
Is one instance of racial profiling that your group is actually focusing on in Santa Cruz?
That's the thing we want to be in a position to...
I see. You have to be able to find one instance.
We want to be sort of a clearinghouse for that, so people will come to our organization if they have a complaint, and then we can help them follow it through.
So far, you haven't found one complaint.
Well, we haven't yet rolled that out.
I see. You're waiting for the appropriate moment.
No, we're waiting to get ourselves organized. You just don't snap your fingers and, everything materializes.
You haven't got a phone number and a form you can use for someone to fight. You're working on... Wait a minute.
Well, you got to work on something to get it done, Things don't just happen, willy-nilly by snapping...
My head is blowing off here. Well, let's move on to another subject. I know that there, for example, is a proposed $24 million new jail appropriation.
Before we get to the new jail appropriation, which was voted 2 days later, 3 days later, actually, last Tuesday, I'm giving a bunch of sarcastic commentary or reaction to Dennis, who's on the board of directors of SCORE, which is a countywide coalition concerned with, they say, eliminating racial profiling. It numbers among its people Simba Kenyatta and other activists, and I've repeatedly been quite critical of their failure to follow up on complaints received by their group years ago that I publicized when I was trying to be helpful myself. And so far, I keep hearing about these meetings of board members and fundraising activities of this and other groups like the ACLU who are impervious to local civil rights violations or don't seem to be interested at all in exposing or publicizing or supporting the abolition of these in a particular way by holding the agencies accountable who are violating the rights of people, whether it's the sheriffs or the Santa Cruz Police Department, First Alarm, Panther Protective Services, you name the group. So I'm always, hopeful that... Actually, I'm not always hopeful. I'm quite quite lost hope in these groups, but I'm willing to take new information if it comes in. Dennis was commandeered by Steve Plaich, who apparently seems to be gearing up for yet another run at the Santa Cruz City Council, to be on the board of the ACLU and the board of SCORE. And Dennis is a sincere activist who shows up at a lot of events to engage in some of the grubby day-to-day work, as contrasted with Steve Plaich, who looks in on the events, I'm thinking of events concerning homeless civil rights, that at least I'm involved with, and doesn't stay long, and also refuses to bring these issues to a head at any of the groups where he's sitting on the board of directors and has been sitting for over a year. So I'm always a bit cranky about these issues, and for, I think, good reason, to people who claim to be pushing these organizations. That doesn't mean I don't feel that... I think, very good friends with Dennis, or certainly friends with Dennis, and certainly have civil relations with Steve Plaich, in spite of the fact that he's declared me a persona non grata for life from his website, Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz, because I put up a link in violation of his wishes to the Kevin Collins, or the Ken Collins video, which showed homeless people being abused by a member of the clean team, and he wanted to, I think, patch up relations with Pamela Comstock of the Santa Cruz City Council, who's also associated with Take Back Santa Cruz, co-founder, in fact. And that's a group that, in the words of T.J. Magallanes, took over the clean team. Although, as I understand it, Pamela Comstock denies that she was involved in any of the scurrilous activities that Ken Collins was actually captured on video doing. And that was the video that apparently the straw that broke Steve Plaich's back, having it linked to his video because Ken Collins was making numerous comments online about the homeless and assorted topics. I felt it was appropriate for people to be aware, if they weren't, of his background. And Steve was enraged. But Dennis is actually always good-natured in these interchanges, and he was around today doing protest at the Forever 21 in the Phil Posner blanket sit-in, which featured at least half a dozen, if not more, blankets. Let's hear some more from the 19th at the Food Not Bombs meal.
Coming up at the Board of Supervisors in two days.
Well, we'll be there to oppose that, you know, along with Sinbaris and others who are...
Huff itself may also show up.
Yeah, no, definitely that's...
You haven't been showing up at the Huff meeting. Is that because you've decided Huff is the wrong stuff?
No. I mean, I live out in Boulder Creek, and it's...
too far to come for you, eh?
No, I have other things that intervene, but no, I still support Huff and what you're doing and hope to attend meetings in the future, but, you know, it's...
Anything you want to announce about anything coming up in the next week or two that we should know about?
Well, let's see. Nothing specific that I'm involved in. Oh, there is the UNA Association anniversary of the UN organization, which will be, I think, this coming Saturday. We'll have a sort of a street fair, I think it is. Yeah, there's going to be there's notices of that are posted around town. It's in the papers and all. I don't have
what time, and we don't know when and where.
Specifics, noon to 3, something like that, you know.
Where?
At the Galleria.
Oh, yes, that's the standard place where they usually have that fair.
So, that's something I'm involved with as well.
And as I understand it from a more recent report from Gail Page, there's actually going to be a street fair, not at the Galleria, but on one of the side streets. It could be Cooper Street, or it could be Lincoln, I'm not sure. Or it could be Walnut, goodness. You have to look around downtown on Saturday. And I believe it's late morning, early afternoon, but that's a UN Association street fair. Again, I'm relying on my memory. And since I don't... Occasionally Huff shows up there with a table. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, civil rights organization. It's a good place to go if you want to get some more information about Huff. But then again, you can also come to the Huff meetings on Wednesday, 11 o'clock at the Sub Rosa at 703 Pacific. Or you can call the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
Well, anything else you wish to comment on?
Well, yeah, there's a lot to comment on now, isn't there? But... right off the top of my head, I can't.
Well, we'll be around. You, we've been talking with?
Dennis.
Thanks, Dennis. Well, we have Food Not Bomber, and her message is...
Come help us, or bring food, and send money.
Come help us cook, if you want, every Saturday at noon.
How can people get it? Just show up?
You can show up if you know the location. If not...
It's a secret location?
Well, we don't like to advertise it as a private residence.
I'm sure Take Back Santa Cruz has plenty of chefs that would want to add a little something to the stew.
You can contact us through our Facebook page.
And the Facebook is under...
Just look up Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs, and you should be able to find us.
Thank you. We've been talking with...
Daniel.
Thank you, Daniel. Here, everybody. We're talking with
Russ Munoz.
And Russ, you say there's police pressure?
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure around here, man. They are looking for any little thing, you know, any little thing to give you some warning or to give you a piece of ticket. They're going to come down October 24th. It all changes. they're going to come down hard on everybody, you know, anybody that does any little small little thing.
Has this happened to you recently?
Well, just people that are around me that I see out here, you know, I see police just harassing people just because they are police officers.
And when was the last time you noticed this?
Every day. You know, it's not just
it. See it happen today?
Yesterday? It's happening all the time. You got these blue coats, the ones that first alarm dude. There's one big guy, the guy.
Big John, perhaps?
Big John, I think. I don't know his name, but.
Big John.
It's two big ones. One looks like a cowboy, and the other one's kind of pudgy.
I only know his name.
He's literally just anybody. Bicycles, skateboarders, anybody that's look like they're going to do something wrong, he's right in your face.
And you remember a particular incident that happened in the last week or so that you saw?
Well, I see little things all the time. What they do, they make little statements when you're walking by.
Such as?
Give you things like intimidation. You just by being out there, you know, you can't do very much on the mall. You can't sit around, you can't stand around, you can't do much.
How you doing?
You know, there's all the...
Has it changed since you... How long have you been here?
I've been coming here since 75.
And have you noticed any changes in the scene?
No, it's always been the merchants fighting the street people. Ain't nothing new about that. It's always been that way. When I first came here, it was the same old thing. But it's always been with the drummers. You know, the drummers were the thing that they was always hate. Now it's like the vendors, you know, all kind of part of it now, you know, but back then it was the same way. He's always fighting against the merchants. They always wanted us out of here.
Let's talk about Big John again.
So we have a fan of Big John's. Are you a big fan of John's?
No.
Not a fan of Big John. Why don't you like Big John? What's the problem? What's the deal?
He acts too much like John Wayne.
Maybe it's one of his fans. Maybe it's a movie star. He's dazzled by John, perhaps. He wants to, you know, this is this man's dream. Who are you to stand in the way of Big John who wants to be like John Wayne? Who can tell? In any case...
Big John, the guy we're talking about, is a first alarm security guard who I first encountered in the library, stalking the library. Someone complained he was following people into the bathroom in order to, I don't know, make sure they were wee-weeing right. I'm not sure exactly what the reason was. Who knows? Could have been a legitimate reason. But I've also observed him. He's a very tall, very burly fellow who... I don't, you know, a person's size isn't necessarily indicate they are aggressive or trying to be intimidating, but I don't have specifics to actually say why I have the impression he is intimidating other than other people's reports and his failure to respond to questions that I ask him. And admittedly, I am pretty critical of him. I mean, I have in the past mocked him when he has appeared, suggesting that we definitely need more security. John, come on over here. You can protect us with your gun, taser, and nightstick, please. Indicating that I don't find his presence or company reassuring in the area. And I notice that the security guards are regularly used, or have been used recently, or at least in the past year, to run homeless people out of the library, off the library grounds, off the city council grounds, and out of the downtown area, and out of the parks. And that's, you know, that's more than just an impression. There are actual accounts of this happening. But, and you heard them on this radio station. Let's hear some more.
You have any thoughts?
No.
And again, we've been talking with...
Ross Manos.
Thanks, Ross. So, you say that on Saturday night there was a...
No, this is Friday night.
Friday night there was an event.
Friday night at MA, you know, the Museum of Art and History, sponsored something, fire festival or something. Yeah, like what they have at the Burning Man, you know, festival. They cordoned off...
They burned a homeless person downtown?
Well, no, they cordoned off, you know, whatever street that is, you know... yeah, I can't remember the street names, but right around by Ma there, and they had, there was a couple of scantily clad women perched atop a van, shaking their booties and whatnot. I mean, it was...
Scantily clad men with erections, masturbating?
Well, they were in the crowd, perhaps, but it was definitely pornographic, softcore, but nonetheless.
Erotic.
Erotic. pathetic, and I thought it was really corrupting the young people in the audience.
Children were beginning to hump each other.
Not on a par with the chalking graffiti, but definitely of the same ilk, I would say, the same character.
Were there needles involved?
Well, there was a lot of fire and brimstone. I mean, so...
I see.
Yeah.
So maybe the needles were coming up next.
Yeah, but definitely this was state-sponsored pornography as far as I'm concerned.
Shocking. Shocking, yeah. And destroying. I want to thank you for this.
I really think at the next city council meeting on Tuesday, whatever her name is...
Mayor Bryan?
No, Pamela...
Comstock.
Comstock should really be called out on the fact that, you know, they allowed this under their watch.
I see.
You know, this sort of really obscene display of human flesh.
Mm, I mean,
yeah, really. So, I mean, there were butts and boobs, you know, overflowing their confines.
Not cocks and rings or anything like that.
Looked away, but...
And we'll have to leave this titillating discussion because we have an incoming phone call, probably from Mike Rhodes. Hi, you're on Free Radio there.
Hey, Robert, it's Mike Rhodes, the president.
Hey, Mike, I was just looking over your story, which I forwarded to the Huff E-List. The grain silo, the Canal Bank homeless encampment is destroyed, graphically illustrated in living color.
Yeah, it's not a particularly happy story. The sort of the best thing about it, I can say, is that there was significant resistance to the destruction of the encampment with, probably 50 community supporters coming out to join the 30 or so homeless people that were there to try and stop the city from destroying the encampment. Ultimately, the effort failed, and the city did destroy the encampment, but people did fight and actually provided some space for people to move their property out, physically stopping the city from bringing bulldozers into that encampment for several hours.
Is this the first time that's happened?
There's been resistance before. In 2011, at the Santa Fe encampment, a large group of community activists and homeless people linked arms and stopped the city from bringing their bulldozers in at that time as well. What happened in that case was the city then simply went to the other side of the encampment. This was a very long street, maybe a block or two long, and came at it from the other side, and then when people went down to that end, then the city brought their bulldozers into the middle. So it was like, you know, you're trying to chase them all over, and there wasn't really enough of us to do that. The other thing that the city does is, like what they did yesterday, was when they saw all the people there blocking the roadways, they simply went to a more remote encampment, which was 200 yards away, and spent hours and hours cleaning that up. I think they were just killing time, hoping that some people would go away, because it's hard to get lots of people to stay all day. And I likened it to a military operation where the city had thought out all these contingencies. They had plans for whatever people were going to do. And one of those strategies is to just stall and let people drift away and then come when there's not as many people there. So the real destruction of the encampment didn't take place till 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and it had started about 7 in the morning. So it was a long day here in Fresno yesterday.
What was the weather like?
Oh, it's actually as good as it gets in the 70s. Clear. Actually quite pleasant.
What happened to the people whose dwellings were eventually bulldozed?
So what happened is that the people who were blockading the entrance to the homeless encampment. There was two entrances. They blocked both entrances. It's a very narrow entrance into this encampment. So they blockaded both ends, and the homeless people that were living there were very upset, and it was very frustrating. And when they saw them destroying the encampment a couple hundred yards away, it was they were quite upset and yelling and screaming at the city workers. But in the end, they decided that they would rather save their property than make a statement by getting arrested and taken away. And it was more important to them to save their property and get it to a safe place than to be arrested and removed and then have their property taken, maybe destroyed. So they negotiated with the city-appointed attorney and made an agreement that we would be allowed to bring a U-Haul trailer in while the bulldozers were held back, and the city held up that agreement. The U-Haul came in. Everybody helped load the U-Haul truck up. I think it made a couple of trips. Some of the people were put up into a hotel by some of the homeless advocates for the night. My understanding is that they were looking today for a new place to set up a camp, which is going to be a difficult thing because what's going on here is that the city has drawn a line in the sand and they're saying there will be no more encampment.
And just a brief question, considering the fact that you guys did a successful lawsuit about the destruction of property, although you're now attempting to get the city to comply with a second lawsuit, I guess there was no confidence that the city would follow, even in the glare of publicity, the court's requirement that their property be properly stored and cataloged, even if they were arrested.
Well, okay, let's talk about that for a minute, because the city actually has changed their strategies in the last couple of years, and they've really their policy and their actions have evolved over the last couple of years to where now what they do is they come out and film everything. The lead workers have video cameras connected to glasses so that it records audio and video of everything. So they go and they, so you can see exactly what they're seeing, and they talk to people about whether they want their property stored or not. If they want it stored, they give them bags. They write out a receipt. They put it in the bag. They give a receipt to the person. And then they put it on a flatbed truck, which is presumably, and if it's not, then that's another issue. But I assume that it's going to a storage facility somewhere, which reminds me we need to check out and make sure that it actually is. But that is what they're doing. And so they have figured out a way to comply with the court order in that they seem to be storing everything that is of apparent value. If homeless people tell them, no, I'm walking away, I don't care about any of this stuff here, they've got that recorded. They've got it on video. And then they're free to go in there and destroy that. Otherwise, if there's any question about abandoned property, they put it in bags or put it on a flatbed truck if it's a big item, and they haul it all away. The problem is, and here's the real problem, Bob, Robert, is that they can't, the homeless people themselves cannot possibly go and retrieve their property and put it anywhere because it would simply be taken again. And, you know, so what's going on here is that the city has come up with this policy where they're storing people's property, but in addition to that, if you leave your property, a shopping cart with clothing or sleeping bags or whatever, or even if it's not in a shopping cart, you have it in a duffel bag or whatever, and you leave it for any length of time at all, the police, if they come by and see it, they will say that it's abandoned property, have city sanitation come out, pick it up, and haul it away. They'll leave a notice up on the wall saying that they've taken that property, but you have virtually no way, if you're homeless, of reclaiming that property because you can't possibly carry everything with you that you own 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Does that mean that they're actually, you have verified that they're actually storing it, that in theory, if some good Samaritan suddenly gave everybody 3 acres, you go get the property, it would all be there in pristine condition? Because I understand there was a secondary lawsuit that denied that this was actually happening.
Well, there's a couple of different things there. Well, one thing you said is if somebody had property and would allow people to live on it, they could then have all their property there, and that would work. But the reality of that is no, that the city of Fresno would not allow anybody within the city limits to provide a piece of property they could lot or what have you for homeless people to build shelters that were not within code. And so, I mean, in fact, the property that was destroyed, the encampment that was destroyed yesterday, was on such a property. The owner, from what I understand, what several people have told me, is the owner did not mind that the people were living there. He was fine with it. But the city came in and said, these people have to move. You have to have them move. And the person didn't act on that. The city threatened him with a fine and that they would be charged with all the cleanup expenses if they didn't authorize the city to go in and clear it out. So then ultimately, because of this coercion, this person said, okay, I'm asking you to remove the homeless people that are there because I don't want them there. And that's what he had to say in order not to be fined.
Yeah, you kind of have diverged. I mean, I assumed that was the case. What I was saying was, well, two things. I actually have kind of branched off from that. One was, you know, if there was a place where people could store their property legally, I don't know, a huge storage facility was suddenly opened up legally, blah, 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 and homeless people could reclaim their property, would they find going to the yards where the police have dumped their property that their property is actually there in good shape, well cataloged, accessible? Or, in fact, weren't you, in fact, aware, you informed us of a lawsuit that was actually going on by the ACLU and other groups to claiming that this was not actually happening in spite of the 2007 court decision demanding that it be so. And apparently you're saying there's the outward appearance of it's happening because of all these receipts and bags and, you know, and video and all that stuff. But is it actually happening, even though, as I acknowledge exactly what you're saying, is it, so what? You can't pick it up. You can't do anything with it. It'll just be picked up again. I accept all that. But is it even there to be picked up?
Well, the answer to that, Robert, is I don't know. We haven't tested that yet. We've been in the middle of, like, other things. But definitely at some point in the near future, within the next 90 days, we will have people go down there and see if their property is there. I suspect that it is. I think that the city has stepped up their game and has evolved a process that would withstand a legal challenge at this point. If not, then that's another story. But it appears that they have gotten a lot of legal counsel on this. They are doing things differently, and in all likelihood, they have people's property stored in some way where if you knew what day your property was taken, you knew where it was taken from, you could probably go in and figure out where it is. Now, I want to see if that's true, but that's the theory right now. So about the lawsuit that you're talking about, there was a class action suit in 07 that ended in a settlement with homeless people, $2.3 million, huge settlement. There were more lawsuits filed after the 2011 demolitions of homeless encampments in the downtown area. But that is different in that it's not a class action suit. There's about 35 individual claimants who are represented by attorneys. The ACLU is not involved at all in this. It's Central California Legal Services and the Arnold and Porter law firm who's in the Bay Area. Those are the two legal entities that are helping the homeless on this case. And what we're alleging is that the city of Fresno, during those raids, took and immediately destroyed homeless people's property. We have photographic and video evidence that that happened. The case is just, in process. It's taking way longer than anybody would like it to, but things are moving ahead. Like, for example, Tuesday of this week, the attorneys for the homeless were able to have a deposition of the mayor of Fresno. And so we're getting lots of good information about who did what, why they did it, and this will eventually lead either to a trial or a settlement by the city of Fresno as we move forward.
Wow. I've also noticed, I've been kind of inspired to sort of read the back and forth between activists and your Fresno Homeless Alliance as they, admittedly, it's only for a day or two to come on out there, but they do come out. They are risking arrest. Have any activists actually been jailed who are housed for assisting homeless people in Fresno or engaging in civil disobedience, either through that through active CD or because the police just improperly arrested them?
No, I can't think of an instance where people have been arrested defending homeless rights. It was interesting because yesterday when all this was happening, the city went way out of their way not to arrest anybody. They didn't want to arrest, have these people arrested who were blocking the bulldozers. The bulldozers came right up to them, and people just stood their ground. And then one bulldozer tried to come in on the other road, and an activist ran over there and sat on the claw of the bulldozer, not allowing it to move any further. So there was definitely provocative actions taken, and I talked to the attorney for the city afterwards, and he just said, yeah, we were going to do everything we could not to arrest anybody. We, we were, totally didn't want to escalate the situation by having people arrested. And, in fact, they didn't have uniform officers that, that's not entirely true. There were a couple of them around, but they were way in the background. They had undercover police there monitoring the situation. And so the usually uniformed officers were all dressed down so you could, they weren't there in their riot gear. They were there playing a low-key role that they would have jumped in if something had happened, but they were kind of holding back.
Do you have you ever gotten a copy of the Fresno Police Department's general orders?
Yeah, I did. I got that about a year ago. It's pretty interesting. Why do you ask?
I always advise people if you're going to file an internal affairs or professional standards complaint, which is essentially a complaint against the police department, that it's often more effective to charge them with violating their own general orders than it is with violating a law. Because that way they face discipline from their superiors. And police officers have this unusual system whereby they don't have the right to claim self-incrimination if they're being questioned by their superior in most departments, or at least in Santa Cruz they don't. They have to answer questions by their superiors or they get fired.
I don't think the officers ask their staff very many inconvenient questions here. They pretty much have a free run to do what they want to do. So
right,
whatever they're doing to the homeless people is pretty you know, far down.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting that, you know, that this power is used, but I'm saying I think it's there if the officers wanted to use it. But the reason I asked you is that was going to lead up to the next question, which is in Santa Cruz, because of the work of the now dead Richard Quigley, who was very much concerned with helmet law, the right of a person to either wear or not wear a motorcycle helmet, and also he was very concerned about abuses in the sheriff's department here. He and his attorney, Kate Wells, or Catnip Kate, as I used to call her, were able to draw to the attention of the courts a section of the vehicle code that states that you have the right to be taken to a magistrate before being jailed or even cited for a violation of the vehicle code. And the Santa Cruz Police Department put into its code that you have the right to be taken to a magistrate before being charged with, I think it's either an infraction or a misdemeanor. And that became an element of strategy in some cases when we were challenging the endless police harassment or the frequent and arbitrary police harassment that homeless people suffer in the downtown area for sitting next to a building, you know, having a, you know, being too close to a garbage can, you know, and these sort of things. That is to say, if a court is open and you are, an officer comes up and wants to write you a ticket for something, you can say, I want to be taken to a magistrate first.
And that's interesting. I hadn't never heard that before.
Yeah, it's part of the general orders of the Santa Cruz Police Department, and it may be that they are doing that because it's part of the I think it's also part of the code, the penal code of the state. Now, I'm not sure under which parts of the penal code it refers to. I think it may be a general part of the penal code. I think otherwise the Santa Cruz Police Department would have agreed to this. But you might want to check it out. It's one way of occupying the time of the police department and discouraging them from giving citations. We have not really adopted it as an effective strategy here. It requires more organization than we have. And also, even though they're supposed to have a magistrate's clerk on duty at the jail over the weekend who would certify, you know, yes, this is a legitimate arrest, there's probable cause, and you have to go to a court date, which is the usual outcome of these kinds of encounters. I was present at a couple of them. You know, the danger is that you have to be during court hours or they'll simply hold you in jail over the weekend. In fact, our city attorney has stated that he is making it a point encouraging the police to arrest people at the time when it could be most inconvenient for them and they have to stay way overnight and pick up their property days later, because we have only property pickups on Tuesday and Thursday for 2 hours at the police department.
Wow, yeah, that's interesting. Let me ask you a question, Robert. Yesterday I found a homeless person who had been cited for having their property with them on the street. And now, there's a little bit of background to that. I've come by to find somebody, a homeless person yesterday, who was with three or four other people, and they had their shopping carts there and some of their possessions around. And then a few minutes after I left, the police pull up and write them all citations for what they said, what the citation says, is debris on the road. So the officer said, you've got all this garbage all on the street, and I'm going to write you a citation for littering the street. So they each got a citation for having debris on the road. And to me, it's like they were, alternatively, if you weren't with your property, they would take your property and put it in the storage. But if you're with your property, now they're citing you for having garbage on the street. Have you ever experienced that?
I've never heard of a person getting a debris on the road ticket, but we do have unattended property citation. And there's also just arbitrary confiscation and destruction of people's property, though in what appears to be sort of like the first stages of what your Fresno city authorities did, they're beginning to claim that they're holding your property. But I've been talking to people recently who said, you know, I've been there and they said, we don't have it. So it's, you know, and the answer is, your question is, I've never heard of anybody using a debris on the road It sounds like a vehicle code. Is it on the road, like we're talking about in the city, or on the highway, or what are you thinking of?
Yeah, so this was in the old industrial section of downtown Fresno, a very run-down area. They were sitting behind a warehouse. It was on a street, but there's nobody driving down. Nobody drives down that street. There's not even any. It's not like you even load trucks there. Nobody would have a real reason to drive down there. They were sitting on the curb. The sidewalk was behind them, and they had some of their property on the street in front of them, like shopping carts or sleeping bags or something. And that's what I saw, but the police, when they came by, apparently saw that it was all debris and that these people had put it there, and they issued them each a citation. So I'm kind of, that's new to me. I hadn't heard of them doing that before. Usually what they do is they'll drive by, and if there's a shopping cart there or property out, they'll announce on their PA system, you know, or whoever owns this property to remove it immediately, or it's going to be taken. And if somebody comes over and gets it, then they could take it away with them. But if nobody comes in a minute or two, they call sanitation department. They come out, wrap it all up, throw it on a flatbed truck, and haul it off somewhere.
With receipts, or just dump it?
Well, I believe that they are storing it, because they write a receipt. They'll write two receipts. One they'll put in the bag with, you know, the property, and the other they post on a wall, the nearest wall, and it says the time that it was taken, what it looked like, and who to call for to reclaim that property.
And did they, in the case of this recent new debris strategy, was it removed as debris?
No. It was, they were just cited and told to remove it.
You know, it sounds like a gratuitous pick an ordinance, any ordinance kind of thing to me. You know, it's hard to tell. You know, who can fathom the minds of those who have 100 different, you know, burning bamboo nails to choose from, whatever they want to choose to torture the poor person on the street. I do notice, however, that in your rather well-illustrated article, a lot of photos anyway, of the resistance and the destruction of the homeless encampment, the last homeless encampment in Fresno on the Central Valley Indie Bay site, indiebay.org/Central Valley, there's an addition by Dan Waterhouse about a proposed ordinance to authorize confiscation of shopping carts found off-store property without any kind of specific allegation that it's stolen. That's, you're going to be at city council with 100 shopping carts to address that issue?
It was actually, I saw Dan's comment on that. That was the first I'd heard about it. I know that there's several pending ordinances about the Courthouse Park downtown, which Occupy Fresno is still there, and they're going to use that as a attempt to remove anybody that has, you know, anybody that has property there. Nobody could be there after 9 o'clock in the evening, and you can only have so much property. I think it's like a square foot or something of property with you at any one time. Obviously, these are laws that are aimed at homeless people and people who are protesting against government policies. And there may be a challenge to any of those ordinances if they pass them. I know the ACLU, who is active in Fresno, has a chapter here. They now have staff here and an attorney. They're looking at that, and they may make a legal challenge.
So, I mean, I feel really weary even just bringing it up, because I spent the afternoon at a protest myself, which was the CD violation. Everybody was violating the infamous downtown ordinances and the specific expansion we had today, which made it virtually impossible for all but a handful of street performers, artists, or vendors, or political tablers to be on the main street, Pacific Avenue. because they'd expanded the forbidden zones to 14 feet, setbacks from all kinds of things, crosswalks, kiosks, phone booths, directory signs, sidewalk cafes, I mean, you name it, very little left, plus banned blankets on the sidewalk as a way of, you know, having as display devices, plus required a 12-foot setback between display devices, plus would only allow 12 square feet total area, so try and squeeze yourself into that with a musical instrument, much less two or three musicians, and, you know, you can kiss your street performance goodbye. But we did...
Well, go ahead. It sounds like they're a little farther along there in Santa Cruz than they are here in Fresno. They're still using a very large club here, where they yeah. seem to be using some finesse there to narrow in on limiting your free speech rights.
Well, they have to do time, place, and manner, or they face, you know, the theoretical problem of the Constitution, whatever it remains of the Constitution these days. And so what they do is they're, you know, they're couching all their, essentially shrinking the sidewalks to virtually nothing as far as public spaces for any of these other groups go, other than commercial interests. And our response, of course, I actually didn't propose it. It was proposed by the father of one of the few council members who voted against this. His name is Phil Posner. He came out and said, I'm going to be, you know, violating the law on October 24th when it goes into effect. And he did, and I joined him, and so did, you know, 30 other people. And the police, of course, as I suspected, ignored it completely, because what they'll then do is they'll enforce the law when others aren't around, is at least what they've done traditionally in Santa Cruz. So the question is, what new strategies... And sometimes when I'm exhausted and can't think of any new strategies, next day new things occur to me. But you have any thoughts about what's coming next in Fresno?
There's a lot of different possibilities of what we could do here next. There's this project of building very small houses. They're about 120 square feet. Designed by a very well-known architect. Somebody said yesterday that what they would like to see happen is us to put about 30 of those up in that same area where the homeless were just removed from at the grain silos and see what kind of a response we get. Because, well, we would have to get the approval from the owner of the property. But these are, you know, very... different than what you're thinking, what most people think of as these tents and lean-tos at an encampment. So you'd have a substantially better place for people to live and see what kind of a reaction you get from the city.
And we aren't talking about the Poverello doghouses or tool sheds.
No, these are like light years away from the tool sheds that Poverello has.
It would be interesting because I take it the city has continued to okay the Poverello tool sheds, and they would then perhaps move on your stuff as being insufficiently responsive to the code. You know.
Yeah, which would be pretty outrageous because they're so much better. They've got this passive solar heating and cooling. They've got ventilation. They're well designed, so they're nothing like the tool sheds that are at the Poverello house. So it would be a challenge in a very different direction by just going ahead and building these units and, you know, saying we're going to do this whether you like it or not. So that's one direction to go in. There have been suggestions of camping at City Hall. People have now moved up north. You know, one of the things that's happened is that because people have been forced out of the encampment, thousands of people have been forced out and are being pushed out daily. They're moving into other parts of the city of Fresno, and there's all kinds of comments about, well, maybe this isn't such a good thing because now they're living, you know, next to the store that, you know, I shop at, or they're up at the river, the San Joaquin River here, camping out with campfires. And you got to understand, San Joaquin River is like the most exclusive area of Fresno where you have the most expensive homes, overlooking the bluffs. So now that they've got all these homeless people moving into the very rural area around there, very wild in a lot of ways, they're freaking out. So there may be a lot of pressure coming from a lot of different directions to come up with a solution. Now, the Fresno Bee, which is our daily paper, had an editorial this morning that said they acknowledge that there's this gap between the city's policy of destroying the encampments and providing people with housing, and that this gap has to be acknowledged and dealt with. That was the good part of their editorial, that they're acknowledging that there has to be a safe and legal place for homeless people to go. The problem with their further standing on this is what they think should be done is there should be one large encampment, which would have to include thousands of people, and that it would be several miles from any residential area. So it would have to be way out in the country, and you'd have thousands of people presumably behind some kind of fence, and that has, people checking you as you come and go.
Concentration camp.
You hit the nail on the head. First you start demonizing people and talking about how dangerous they are. Then you take away their property. Then you move them to a concentration camp far away from where most people live. This has been done before, and not with good results. So the Fresno Bee, while they are now acknowledging that there's a gap in public policy to deal with people who are on the street, their solution is to build a concentration camp.
That's the criticism some have of the sanctuary camp proposal here. Although I was just about to recommend you look into the Portland approach where, you know, the Dignity Village and the Right to Dream 2, the second more recent homeless encampment that came out of Occupy Portland and actually has been successfully fighting to, it still exists, and they're fighting to move to another place. I think they're self-managed and so forth. You might consider, your next approach would be to create a mobile campground, although I guess that would require more participation from homeless people than has been the case with your past involvement with people in Fresno who are homeless in encampments.
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot of self-organization from homeless people themselves to come up with solutions on this. So I don't know what will emerge. My personal feeling is that you'll have to have, dozens of small encampments all over town in different parts of the community, so that it was decentralized. When you try to centralize everybody together, you come up with more problems. The encampment that they destroyed was actually a very good example of a well-functioning homeless encampment. People there got together regularly, made decisions together. They would allow people in or not in based on whether they would be compatible with the group. And there was very little trouble out there. It was pretty isolated, even though it was right in the middle of the city. But largely, it ran very well. It wasn't like the police were out there every day, for something. In fact, I think the police hardly ever went out there because it just ran so smoothly. But this is what the city decided to destroy. They have no interest, from what I can tell. The people at City Hall have no interest in developing any kind of homeless encampments that would meet people's needs, that would be safe and legal and have basic public services provided. They seem to have, and this is one of the things that came out of the deposition with Ashley Swearingen, the mayor, on Tuesday, is that her narrative is that homeless encampments are bad and that homeless people should be given vouchers for housing. And that's their policy, is to take down these encampments because of, you know, they're not up to code, and they're, you know, they don't have all the services and all this. They're a fire. There's some fire problems. There really were in some of the encampments. They burned down, and you know, people would get hurt. And so, you know, her narrative is that homeless encampments need to be destroyed, and we need to give everybody decent housing. Well, that is a very simple message, and it gets traction in the media. The problem is that it totally misses the fact that
they don't provide the housing.
Yeah, that are on the street without housing, and it's a great story to tell people that's what you want to do. But the reality is there's so much disconnect between what she says and the reality that people are starting to see that there's this huge gap, and that's what the Fresno Bee editorial acknowledges today.
I gotcha. We're talking to Mike Rhodes of Fresno Homeless Alliance. He's spent 40 minutes with us on the phone, probably more than he intended to, as usual. If anybody has a question for Mike, you can call in 831-469-3119, 831-469-3119, and give it about a minute or two, and then I will release you from your obligations, Mike Rhodes.
Well, you know, get chatting with you, Robert, and I can't keep it 10 or 15 minutes, but I mean, there's just so much to talk about that's going on here, and it's good to get feedback from you about what's happening there, compare notes, and, you know, I learn as much from you as you do from me.
Well, you know, it's too bad we weren't able to get that video of your encampments before it dissolved, but maybe, you know, I guess future encampments are always arising. It's the nature of people to have to sleep at night and to gather together for protection and mutual aid, as the anarchists used to say.
Well, of course. That's our argument, is that people are better off together. And, for example, this encampment near the grain silos worked very well. People could leave their property there, go out and do something else, and come back and know that their neighbors would keep an eye on things. Where if you're a single woman and you're forced to live under an oleander bush because the city has destroyed the encampments, you're much more vulnerable there than you would be if you had neighbors that would help and protect you if somebody came to do you harm.
Yeah, we have the same. We make the same arguments, you know, talking about the Coral Street Open Air Shelter of 1995, or Camp Paradise 2001, or Homies for the Homeless of 2007, or even the Sanctuary Camp of 2013 proposals. And it's pretty obvious, but there is a sort of a blinkered and dogged determination, and I was going to ask you, this as sort of my final question, to drive homeless people out of sight and out of town, or at least with the fantasy that that can be done without really adopting, you know, some really bloody repressive measures. I guess what I wanted to know, I think it's eluded me right now, but I guess I asked you before, have you considered any of these shopping cart parade approaches to, you know, mobily move a camp from place to place? I also remember that's a question I like to answer. And then a second one is, was there a specific redevelopment rationale for the destruction of these camps in terms of, I don't know, you know, some new building project going in, the carnival of, I don't know, some huge world fair or big convention coming to town, anything like that? Or is it just some, you know, brainchild strategy in Swearingen's office decided, oh, we'll eliminate the homeless encampments because now we've got legal advice because we can do it more effectively without worrying so much about legal challenges?
Well, as near as I can tell, and, you know, I cannot reach inside the mayor's mind, but what I think it is that all this works for her. She believes that the encampments make the city look bad. They have major redevelopment plans for the downtown area. They see the encampments there as being a hurdle for them to get over. And if they could just clear them all out, then it would look nicer. I think what they're looking for is some kind of a theme park-esque environment for downtown development. And in order to do that, they need to push the homeless people out. They also get some money through HUD to provide, they've built some very expensive apartments for the homeless. I can't remember the number. It's somewhere between $11 and $14 million they built for a Renaissance project. It's a group of one-bedroom or really studio apartments that house 60 to 70 homeless people. And they're just enormously expensive. And so who does that benefit? Well, one of the people that benefited from that was Tom Richards, who owns a development company called PennStar. And for overseeing that project, he brought in a cool $1 million to build these projects for the homeless. And it just so happens that we've also found that PennStar and many of their associates on their board of directors were contributors to Mayor Ashley Swearingen's campaign. So the builders, developers, the people who oversee these projects, they're all interconnected. It's business as usual. Some people might call it corruption, but it's at least business as usual that they're rubbing their backs and they're getting their backs rubbed in return. So you're getting housing for homeless. You're getting the money through HUD. It, money is going to your political and financial supporters. They're getting wealthy off of this, and you're getting campaign donations. So I think that works pretty well for that group.
So, and I guess maybe we'll leave the shopping cart question for another time. If you decide to do a shopping cart parade, let me know, and I'll certainly announce it for those who want to head east.
You'll be the first to know, Robert.
Hey, thank you. And again, if people want to catch up with you, we have a rather extensive homeless chronology of articles on, what's the website?
Well, if you go to IndyBay, IndyBay.org, then you'll see the Central Valley page. Go to there. Then you'll see my articles on these recent demolitions of homeless encampments. Read those stories, and then from there you'll get a link to the list of articles that Robert's talking about. There's goes back 10 years. There's probably hundreds of articles, videos, and photos there. If you were interested in any particular aspect of what's gone on with the homeless in the last 10 years in Fresno, it's probably there.
Appreciate it, Mike, and thanks for calling in on probably a weary day after.
Well, I'm actually feeling much better. I was tired yesterday, but I'm starting to recover now. So I appreciate getting the opportunity to talk to you, and we'll talk again soon, I hope.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye-bye. Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye. And lines are open in case anyone wants to call in, 831-427-3772. You tune to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz at freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and this is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Let's diddle a while with a little music from Brianna Brewer and Friends, and I'll be back.
think so.
And rather than be lulled to sleep by that, I'm going to turn now to some audio from the protests of last Sunday. That was the advertised tour of shame that shamefully didn't happen, but did involve a number of interviews, which I'm now going to play. And again, the theme was standing up to a city council crackdown on homeless performers, artists, vendors, and people generally, members of the public who want to use Pacific Avenue for things other than commercial shopping and buying and that sort of thing. So let's listen to some of that and perhaps a call or two. Who knows?
So it's October 20th, about 20 to 2. After a friendly bill helped me set up, I'm down here with a little table trying to advise the public about the sidewalk snatching coming up on the 24th. We'll see how that goes. And next to me, there is a sidewalk merchant, perhaps, who had his blanket on the ground, and now it's on his skateboard, so that's arguably a freestanding device, which won't be illegal, although he looks like he's within 14 feet of a trash can. And there's other folks right next to him who have little metal sculptures, like little metal trees that they've placed directly on the sidewalk. Hey, Isaac Collins! The lyrical eye has arrived. He is very lyrical, and it's a sunny day. It's an interesting question whether items directly placed on the sidewalk be considered on an illegal display device. I don't know or not. It's been an error. We're talking with
Skylar Nichols.
And Skylar, how old are you?
12.
And how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
Pretty much until I was born.
And what do you think of the downtown area with these displays and people with their tables and blankets on the sidewalk?
Well, it's just like people are just trying to make a living, and it's not taking that much away from the other stores. They still make, like, a bunch of money.
I tend to agree with you, you know. And I see you have your NYPD T-shirt on there.
Yeah.
All right. And, again, we've been talking with
Skylar Nichols.
Gotta be one there. And across the street, Isaac Collins, Lyrical Eye, is standing with a sign. This will be illegal October 24th. And that's refers to dancers dancing in front of New Leaf Market and a drummer drumming. The dancers will be able to dance, but there will be no drum to dance to because it's a display device. Okay, I'm talking to a person who stopped at my tiny table to read the Protest Against Prejudice flyer and the October 24th Santa Cruz's Downtown Ordinances Will flyer. What's your thought about all this?
I disagree with the upcoming ban for downtown, the upcoming ordinance, and I don't think that the only people who should be down here are people frequenting stores or restaurants. That leaves a lot of us out.
Now, are you a liver downtown yourself? You have a resident here?
No, I do not.
So you're one of those people that you're kind of going to be inconvenienced by this law. It's illegal to sit on 95% of the sidewalk now.
Yeah, if I choose to sit down, yes, it will inconvenience me because I don't necessarily come down here to go to a restaurant or to buy.
Do you feel unsafe? You're a woman. You're in pretty good shape, but you know, have you been hassled down here?
Never.
And how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
35 years.
Well, wait a minute. It's supposed to be very unsafe downtown. Are you? This is a story. What are you, some sort of superwoman?
No, I'm not. I've just never been hassled down here.
How much time would you say you, how many, often you come down per week?
I probably come down here 4 times a week. I like to come down here after work. I get off at 3 and then just kind of take a walk on the mall.
What kind of work do you do?
I'm a caregiver.
And what about your, do you ever take your charge downtown?
No, I do not. She doesn't have a wheelchair, and that's what she needs to get around.
So we need more wheelchairs and less security guards, perhaps.
Yes, I think so.
Anything you have, thoughts you have you want to add to this?
No, I just, you know, I'll be at the sit-in on the 24th, and I encourage everyone else who cares about this to be at the sit-in also.
You want to take some flyers with you? You can if you want.
Yeah, I would.
Okay. And you can say who you are, you can give a pseudonym, or you can just remain anonymous.
I'd like to remain anonymous.
Remain anonymous. Of course, I may demand a hug from you, you know.
Pardon me?
I may demand a hug.
Oh, that's okay.
All right, we'll see how that works.
Anonymous.
Okay, a hugamous.
Say it.
You've had a time perspective on this. At one time, you were a host.
Yes, I was.
For how long were you a host?
A year.
And what year was that?
I don't remember, but it was within the last 5 years.
And how was a host? By a host, you mean a person who walks up and down, gives instructions, warns people about violating the laws and so forth. Why did you stop being a host?
They fired me.
Well, what did you do wrong as a host?
I bought a homeless person a cup of coffee one day, and I got into a verbal argument with one of the merchants down here, unnamed, when he wouldn't call a ambulance for someone who is homeless who had fallen and hit their head on the concrete.
And were you fired? Was Gina still the head of the host at that time?
Yes, she was. She was the one who fired me.
And what did she say to you as she kicked you out the door?
She said, if you don't get out of here, I'm going to call the police in the office.
That's my little Gina. Now, the host's office has... Where was the host's office?
It was...
You're pointing up the street, too.
Yes, above.
Across from the Palomar.
Yeah, that one.
I think they moved now to around the corner in a place that doesn't have any markings, so you can't tell.
Well, I don't think our place up there had markings either.
But you were near the Downtown Association, I think.
Yeah. It used to be where the Del Moret is now.
Right, I remember that. Those were the real old days.
Yeah, what I was they, there, too.
What did they pay you as a host?
I don't remember, but it was not a whole lot more than minimum wage.
Was there a big emphasis put on snitching, on calling the police?
Yes, yes.
And how did that sit with you?
I think I was in the wrong line of work. I don't enjoy doing things like that.
Now, did you find you called the police mostly on people who were doing things that were dangerous to other people or just violating the ordinance?
Personally, if there was a violent incident going on that needed more attention, if I couldn't stop it, I would call them. But ordinances, no. I never did.
Did Gina develop a dislike for you because of that?
It was never said out loud, but I think it was pretty apparent that I didn't fit into the ideology of them.
And you were there for 5 years?
No, I was there for 1 year.
For only 1 year?
Yeah.
Is it a job? It isn't a job you'd ever take again?
Or? No. I very much enjoyed the exercise of it, the being outside, and the helping with the information and stuff. I loved. But the enforcing of the ordinances, and we didn't enforce them. We were supposed to just tell people, but I didn't enjoy that. For one thing, I couldn't see any purpose for most of them.
Now, did you feel, has the safety of the town changed in terms of your feeling downtown and all? There's been a lot of talk about some people feeling unsafe and wanting to have more security guards and so on. What do you think about that?
I don't see it as any more dangerous, and I do not want more security guards. We have more than we ever have had before. It's not needed, in my opinion.
Are they an intimidating presence for you?
No, No, but I don't like what they represent. Let's put it like that.
Now, are you going to expose your secret identity, or are you going to remain anonymous?
I'm going to remain anonymous, but I assume some people who hear this are going to know.
They will know who you are.
Plenty of people knew when I got fired. It was very unjust.
Did you have any appeal recourse?
No, I did not, and I didn't receive... the day that they decided they didn't want me there, they fired me. I was out the door.
Well, it sounds like I'm sorry to hear it, even though I'm generally critical of all the hosts for whoever they are. But,
I remember.
You do?
Oh, I do.
Can I come after you as well?
Once in a while. A thriller every year. I knew it wasn't personal.
No, it wasn't. It isn't. Again, thank you, former host.
You're welcome.
And come back anytime. Yeah,
thank you. I will.
Pass on the flyers. Let me give you some here. Yeah. Another thing I was told by this former host was that she feels these laws were primarily designed to get rid of people the merchants didn't like. Am I going to have that right?
That was my belief. No one, they weren't told to us that way, that the ordinances were for that reason. But I believe they were. I mean, what does it hurt a merchant if someone is closer than, however many squares they're supposed to be?
7 squares.
What difference does it make?
Well, it could ruin their business.
And during the winter, we'd have to always tell people when it was raining to get out from under the awnings, and I hated that. That was probably the worst. You can't stand here where it's nice and dry. Get out in the rain.
Did you go do that yourself?
People know what to do.
No, I don't think I... Maybe
you disobeyed, Gina?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was very apparent then. It wasn't the job for me.
Well, it sounds like you let your conscience rather than your superior rule the day.
Yeah, and it cost me a job. I was on unemployment for a long time after that.
Grab a flyer. And it's about 2:10, and I've heard from the precious stone, I'm not sure how precious, but the stone displayer and seller who has a cloth set up on his skateboard as a display device. He's told by the police it will not be legal, even though his skateboard is perpendicular to the sidewalk. So there's an example already of either how the police misunderstand the law or are going to be improperly interpreting it and creating their own narrative as they go, depending on their own feeling about what's appropriate downtown. Again, police state rather than state of laws. Stealing the public sidewalks. That's what the city council will be doing on October 24th. Save our sidewalks. Save our street artists. This man will be illegal where he sits on the 24th. So will the woman next to him. So will I. Sidewalks are for people, but not after October 24th. Artists and musicians' displays will be severely restricted, if not banned. Just say no to merchants who want to seize all the sidewalks for profit. Sidewalks are for the whole community, not just for the rich. Save art, music, and crafts on the sidewalk. These become illegal on the 25th of October. That's in 3 days, folks. Yeah,
24th, actually.
So, we are talking with...
Hello.
And your name is?
JC.
And JC, how long have you been around the Santa Cruz scene?
I actually live in Chico, California, but Santa Cruz is the first place I choose to visit for every vacation.
Really?
Yes.
And... what kind of work do you do, or do you work? Are you a student?
I do. I am a full-time student at Chico State, and I am a nanny, so I work with children.
Okay.
Yes.
And as an attractive young woman, how much time do you spend in Santa Cruz?
I I'd probably try and visit Santa Cruz at least a weekend every month.
Do you feel safe here?
Yes, I do.
Because one of the reasons...
That's why I come back.
I would imagine. But that's one of the reasons, as I was telling you before, that they want to almost eliminate street performers, musicians, artists.
That's horrible. That's art. That's art. They should let that happen. It's natural. It's.
But aren't they the wrong kind of people?
Everyone. No, there's no wrong people, I don't think. I think everyone should be treated equally, and everyone should be given the same right, you know? There's nothing different.
What's going on?
What are you studying over in Chico?
Child development.
And how are you doing in your studies?
I have straight A's.
And how are you doing in your personal relationships with people?
Awesome. He's right there with the tree.
And are you abusing him? Is he abusing you?
No way. We come to visit Santa Cruz every time together since we've been together, and it's been 3 years. So.
Welcome to Santa Cruz, and read that, tell us what you think, and come back as well. We've been talking with?
Thank you very much. And this is JC.
Thanks, JC.
Yeah, we have a call, sounds like. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hi, you're on Free Radio, I hope.
Well, you're not.
What do you mean I'm not?
It's dead.
Oh, interesting. Because we're still streaming, so...
Well, I know, but it's there.
Oh, well, try connecting again.
You know.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. Well, it's good. Callers who call in, let me know that. Give me a chance to double-check what's going on. And that could be important because, well, for a number of reasons, actually... Indeed. Let's continue with, again, looks like we're in the midst of last Sunday's protest interviews, and I'm going to continue with that. Unless you decide to call in at 831-427-3772, in which case your calls will take precedence.
It's legal if you have money, but if you don't, watch out. Santa Cruz, where the sidewalks will become illegal for artists on the 24th, except for very small spaces.
Like this.
Smiling in Santa Cruz is still legal, but keep watching.
Oh, man. I mean, if I can't shine my pearly whites off no more.
Santa Cruz, where a backpack is an invitation to discrimination at a restaurant. Santa Cruz, where artists and musicians become illegal if they display their wares on the streets on October 24th, except for a very few small spaces.
So, Isaac, you have a report on other cities?
Yeah. A couple weeks ago, I went to like San Francisco, San Jose on the streets to see if there's any street performing. But actually, there isn't. There's not much. You know, their laws are really, like, on tight. And, you know, they got people that it's against the law to do poetry on the streets in San Francisco. It's against the law to even have a cipher. So I've been paying attention to what's going on in San Jose, San Francisco, Los Angeles. And, like, the laws are really, like, getting bad. They're really pretty much telling you that it's against the law to open your mouth on the streets. That's pretty much what's going on all over California right now.
Thank you, Isaac.
For sure.
Well, you can always count on me to complain.
Yeah,
count
on us, man. It's been there.
So we're talking with...
Helios Creed.
And Helios, you are a musician of some fame.
A little bit.
And how do you feel about being told, for example, you'll only be allowed to perform in three squares as a total area?
Well, that's... They made it illogical. I mean, you can't play.
It's L-shaped. Now, come on.
You can't do that.
What do you mean you can't do that? You have to learn to adapt to our city council.
No, the city council could suck my cock.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Your sexual preferences are none of our affair.
I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
Nor none of their affair. So you feel that's an unreasonable restriction. What about this restriction?
Do.
That's not enough space.
That's not enough space for any musician. Musicians should be treated like the utmost with class. I'm sorry.
No.
Sorry.
Assuming that they're
beating the drum.
Yeah, you're beating the coffee cup.
Yeah.
In this case.
Yeah. But they should treat us good because we're always going to be the people they think about. You go to see the graveyard Jimi Hendrix is at. Nobody sees anybody else. They go visit him. It's trampled. You know what I mean?
The foolish people. They don't understand. Yeah. Their own loved ones they deny.
He didn't care about him when he was around.
Right. They're shooting themselves in the foot.
I did, but...
And so you're not a fan of this ordinance, I take it.
Hell no. Santa Cruz, the coalition of Santa Cruz has been up people's ass since I can remember. That's all I know. And you've been fighting it since day one. They're just a bunch of, you know, just a bunch of
They're
fucking...
They're trying to make it too safe.
Yeah.
There's no good art that can come from a place that's just too safe.
Well, in Santa Cruz, too, there's this very rich coalition kind of people, and there's people like us who are don't worship money. You know, I mean, if I wanted to, I'd be a doctor or a lawyer. You know,
people from poverty and art and artistic expression.
We need to teach people money isn't the most important thing in this country, and they're going to learn that sooner or later.
And we've been talking with
Helios Creed
and his associate
Keith Thompson.
Yeah, we're in the same
in the band Crone, now playing at the
Chrome.
We're playing
Chrome
now in the studio.
Now it's now working out its latest obscenities in the studio.
Austin Psych Fest in May.
Yeah, we got the Psych Fest in May.
Here.
We're coming up.
All right. And you'll be playing on the streets inside Three Squares.
Yeah. Right. You bet, man.
Praise you, the Lord.
Yeah. Freedom of speech still exists. Freedom of speech.
Oh, yeah, for the moment.
Yeah.
Santa Cruz, where sidewalks become illegal for those who are artists and musicians on October 24th.
What's that?
We're talking with...
My name is Mark.
And Mark, you say that you find something ridiculous about these laws?
Oh, hell yeah. This is going to take the whole charm out of Santa Cruz away from us. I mean, what the fuck? You want to go to somewhere else and be like everywhere else? Or... Well, anyway.
Well, we don't want your kind around Santa Cruz.
Well, there's a problem there. They're targeting a certain group of people, and we're all human beings.
You guys know what's going on. They're going to be passing
Thank you. Ordinance on radio for you. What's your thought about this?
Well, there are multiple effects to attempting to pass this kind of an ordinance. One of which, of course, is that it changes the flavor completely of downtown. And one of the side effects, even counterproductive to what they're attempting to do, is that it's going to decrease the amount of people like myself that come down here to shop and to be in an environment that's really pleasant to be in. But, of course, the most fundamental aspect of it is that they are destroying people's freedom of expression. And that's really not what this community is all about.
I think you're the next candidate for mayor, for sure. Better you than any of these clowns.
That's very nice of you to say, but actually, Mr. Norris, you've been the one that's been doing everything for this community for a long time. So.
But your beard is much better trimmed than mine. You want to say who you are for our audience?
My name is Jim Cohen, and I'm a retired drug and alcohol counselor. I live in Boulder Creek, but I spend a lot of time in Santa Cruz because I love the environment down here. So.
Thank you, Jim. You were actually... I'm sorry, Jim. Go ahead. Again, I have to introduce you. You were a juror on a case in 1997, and you you actually were the one juror who said not guilty, right?
Yes, I felt that the judge's instructions were completely illegal. He told us at that time that these young people that were protesting, which to me was completely within their constitutional rights, that we should disregard any laws except local ordinance. And since I had been in law school studying constitutional law, I realized that actually the United States Constitution supersedes any local ordinance.
And what Jim Cohen is talking about is the what we called the City Council lockdown trial. And that was a situation in the summer of 1996 in the middle of a long, four-month-long protest night and day in front of City Hall demanding an end to the sleeping ban. Started by Dragonzard Dan Hopkins and shit-kicker Sean Alimi, under the mayorship of Mike Rotkin and vice mayorship of Scott Kennedy, where the city took unusual measures to crack down on the protest, although the protest couldn't be done today because the city by ordinance has short-circuited the constitutional protection for the right to protest at public buildings and to assemble publicly. And what they, Mayor Rotkin at that time tried to get an injunction against these protesters and failed because the Judge Samuel Stevens ruled we can make it so that if they violate the law in front of City Hall, they will go to jail immediately, not just get an infraction. But, and one of those laws, of course, was the sleeping ban, so people had to stay awake all night or risk contempt of court and immediate jail. But we can't make it so that they can't be there because that would be a violation of their freedom of assembly. Well, a decade later, Danette Shoemaker, in the face, actually it was 13 years later, in the Peace Camp 2010 protest, she issued an edict in consultation, you might say criminal collusion, with then-mayor, I think it was Matthews, and city manager Martine Bernal and police chief Kevin Vogel, to simply rule that the area was closed at night, and so that couldn't be used as an essentially doing the same thing the judge said couldn't be done by injunction, and they just did it by administrative behind-the-scenes edict with no public input whatsoever. So currently, as at the county building, it is illegal to even hold up a sign at night outside City Hall if you're there after 10 o'clock. Anyway, but in 1996, that was not the case, and the protest went on. And at one point, numerous people, some of whom were part of the protest, some of whom were more part of a more radical group called the Revolutionary Coalition, chained themselves to the furniture of the city council chambers and started shouting, "Homes, not jails," which was, honestly, a disruption of the city council, but a disruption for a political purpose. And they were arrested, and they were tried, and this juror, I think this is only in the case of Jim Costner, who was tried separately. I could be wrong about that. Or James Costner, as he now calls himself. He now teaches up in the East Bay and was later arrested and tried for smashing the Columbus statue in San Jose. But in this case, in Santa Cruz, the jury was hung and they dropped charges because Jim Cohen refused to convict. And that's the case he was talking about. It's also the case where activist David Silva, who you hear calling in on my show occasionally, and who was at the protests in the last few weeks against the anti-homeless downtown ordinances, the anti-musicians, anti-performer downtown ordinances, was trying to present petitions to the city council. He was running for council himself against the sleeping ban, and he was attacked by then-officer Andy Crane, smashed into a post outside, and was so injured he couldn't finish his campaign. He sued Crane and won some money, but that was all part of this huge kind of brouhaha that happened in the summer of 1996 in the fight against the sleeping ban, which ultimately led to some smaller changes in the sleeping ban as activism continued to gain traction over the next few years, culminating in the election of Christopher Crone, Keith Sugar, and Tim Fitzmaurice, who then promptly mostly turned around and betrayed the commitments that we thought they had made to the community on these issues. Anyway, let's hear more from the interviews of last Sunday, and I think we're going to have to wait to hear what happened today, which was mostly more of the same, although I would say there's a lot of chalk on the sidewalk in front of the Forever 21 store, and a lot of street performers. A number of street performers came out, I'd say a dozen maybe more, and stayed even after those of us who were only committed to a couple hours, myself and Phil Posner, who came down and supplied signs and tables and flyers and took off. I kind of waited around another hour, an hour and a half. Phil took off after about 2.5 hours, and Micah Posner, the council member, did come down for 45 minutes or an hour and hung out and spoke to people. No one was arrested. No one was cited. There was a couple of warnings given. And we'll be playing some of that tape on Sunday when you tune in, if you tune in. Let's hear a little more of earlier interviews from the street.
So I felt that they were...
I want to run you for judge as well as city council. Good idea. Maybe a dual position.
So I, you know, even though there was tremendous pressure for us to convict these young people, I felt and I still feel that freedom of expression is one of our most sacred rights, and it has to be protected. So I felt then that the jury should say that they were innocent, and I still feel the same way. And I think that the same principle which existed then exists now. Freedom of expression is absolutely essential if we're going to attempt to have any kind of democratic process.
What was the reaction of the rest of the jury to your position?
They wanted to go home because, naturally, it was a tiring process. They were frustrated with me because I kept saying that it was a constitutional right of expression. And basically, they told me to just shut up and just convict these people. And I could not go along with that in all conscience. You know?
And was there anybody who almost was with you, or were you the only one?
There were a number of people that told me after the trial was over that actually they agreed with me and that they felt that what the city council was attempting to do was really a suppression of our rights, but that they were really afraid, based on the judge's instructions, to express that publicly, and that's what they did. They just went along with the flow.
You know? Publicly denounce the judge afterwards?
No, I didn't publicly denounce the judge because I realized he's merely one of many people that feel that way, but I did speak in a radio interview and tell them exactly how I felt. Not that that had any great impact on
my radio interview, or somebody else?
It was some young lady for the Santa Cruz. I don't know what the name of this.
This KZSC, this KSCO.
Yeah, it was KSCO. Yeah. So that was a very entertaining experience for me because I was actually completely ignorant of what had actually happened. I did not really know. But as soon as I heard what had happened, I realized that they completely overreacted, just like they're doing today with this attempt to suppress people's rights. You know, same kind of reaction.
And again, we've been talking with
Jim Cohen, retired drug and alcohol counselor,
the defender of liberty in the Santa Cruz County area.
There are actually many people that feel as I do. Sometimes people are a little bit inhibited to really express themselves, but I think there are a lot of people that know that what they're attempting to do now is completely wrong. You know? And it's going to be counterproductive to them, really. It's going to completely change the flavor of downtown. So.
Thank you.
There's no reaction to war that's appropriate other than fuck war.
Yeah.
That's the only one.
Fuck war, make love.
And since having been in Vietnam and seeing the horrors of it, I can tell you that firsthand. You know?
So I know you may not want me to. I'll note for my own information. I just heard that you had an encounter with a host who, because you were wearing a Pussy Riot T-shirt about the group, two of whom I think are still in jail, the three women. Still in jail in Russia for what's their crime? Disrespect to the church?
Disrespecting the church and also the Soviet leader, Putin.
Putin riot. I don't know. So she said it was inappropriate for the downtown area?
Yeah, and I said actually it's very appropriate because freedom of speech is always appropriate. And I really did not feel that if she was aware of the actual conflict that existed in Russia about freedom of speech, that she would not be discouraging me from wearing this kind of a T-shirt. And she actually was just ignorant of what the
real... She gave you a hug and a kiss?
No, she didn't do that. In fact, I could still see that she found my protest T-shirt distasteful, but at least she backed off from...
But she actually approached you and suggested you should not have that T-shirt on.
Well, we were chatting about another issue entirely, and I was...
So she didn't come up to you?
No, I was saying that I really liked the way downtown is, and that I felt that that it had a wonderful flavor, you know, unique to this area.
Except for you and your Pussy Riot T-shirt.
And she said, well, I think your T-shirt is a little out of bounds.
Yeah. Well, we hope you've learned from that encounter.
I've learned that it's important to fight for freedom whenever you can, no matter where the forces against freedom, try to express themselves. themselves. So
now you got to just convince the ACLU locally about that, which is a big, big step.
What is what's going on with the ACLU?
Oh, they won't even defend their own petitioners who are being told they can't gather signatures and give out literature in the parking lot at Trader Joe's because Trader Joe's arrests them for trespass. Also, of course, the ACLU refuses to defend homeless people around the sleeping ban. They didn't stand up against the downtown ordinances. They're a, locally, they're a horrible group.
They folded entirely.
A long time, yeah.
One of the things that was really wonderful when I came back from the war was to see the fact that there was an active, vigorous protest movement. And that gave me great encouragement because once you experience something like that, you never again want the United States to be involved in any suppression of any country or anybody's liberties whatsoever. And this kind of expression of you know, the very best actually that our culture offers, which is freedom of expression, this kind of right has to be protected. It's fundamental, you know. So
I agree. Thank you, Jim.
You're very welcome.
So we have a man who is a supporter of the ordinances. No, you don't have to say who you are, but you're a support. You think a phony artist should be somewhere else, right? He's clammed up on us, folks, but that seemed to be his perspective when he approached. But it's rare to find someone who actually supports these laws, and it's interesting. He's making sign language. Let me see if I can interpret here. It's bigger than a bed box. Turn it on. Turn it off. Turn it down. Turn the tape recorder off. He wants me to turn off my tape recorder. Should I do it? Should I succumb to the censorship on Pacific Avenue? Only for a moment, to give you an opportunity to give me a little confidential chat. So, my thoughtful friend here has told me that freedom is only free when you aren't restricting the freedoms of others. Is that a fair way of putting it? And he does not, yeah, repeat, I've said he favors downtown ordinances. He does not, but he is concerned about some of the behaviors of some of the other folks using the sidewalk. He's nodding yes. Can we get him to say exactly what his concerns are? Stay tuned. So it's October 21st. I'm at the Red Church. It's about 5:10. I'm talking with
Jack.
Jack, you're leaning on a nice-looking cart with your stuff on it, and you're waiting to say something.
I'm waiting to thank Will for giving me the cart because I just had two back surgeries and I needed it. God, he brought it to me just in time.
Right on, man. How long were you in the hospital?
2.5 months.
Wow. Shit, here in Santa Cruz?
USC in LA.
And this is a shopping cart, or not quite a shopping cart, but a traveling cart for his possessions. In Santa Cruz, it's really difficult for people to have any place to store their stuff, and that's why you see them hauling it around with them. It's not because they're obsessively attached to it, or because they're weird hoarders necessarily, or because they're obsessively involved with their possessions. It's because they don't have any options.
And how'd you end up here?
That's where you live. I've been walking ever since I had my back surgery to try to rehabilitate myself a little bit.
So you walked from L.A.?
No, but I just got on the Greyhound bus and I just come and walk to try to rehabilitate myself because I didn't walk for, I was bedridden for over a year.
And how's that coming?
Slowly, but I'm just trying to get myself strong again.
And that's slowly working?
Yeah, it's working here.
And how long you been in Santa Cruz?
About 2 months.
How is it treating you? I know you said you were reluctant to speak because you didn't want to be negative, but honestly speaking, how are you feeling about it? It sounds like it's a hard life.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal out here. It's probably one of the most brutal places I've ever been, and I've been on the streets for many, many years, and this is pretty brutal here.
What makes it Santa Cruz more distinctively brutal, let's say, than else otherwhere so you've been?
I would say more so the just the mentality of some of the people that have come out of prison, and the gang mentality out here is just pretty brutal.
Have you yourself suffered assaults or robberies of any kind?
Yes, I have.
And how frequently has this happened to you?
Well, it's starting to calm down now that they kind of know me, but when I, for the first month, it was just brutal.
They were just antagonizing the hell out of me.
We're talking about homeless people or authorities or housed vigilantes? Or
All of the above, yeah.
Who is the most, the group that did this the most, as far as you could see?
I really don't want to pinpoint out one group, but God, God will take care of it.
They were all doing it.
Yeah.
And you're outside tonight?
Yes.
And have you been ticketed for being outside?
You know, I've been pretty lucky. I haven't been. I've been told not to be back, but I've just been lucky with the tickets so far, so good.
Are you generally camping or sleeping alone, or do you have folks with you?
It's on and off switch with that.
And as a man recovering from back surgery, because that's what it was, right? Back surgery. How does it feel? I mean, do you have to make special accommodations to lay down at night?
Yeah, I try to lay down on something soft. I like the ground is a little hard for me, so I try to go somewhere where I know the ground's a little softer.
Do you have any words or message for people out there generally that you want people to hear or know?
Just stay strong.
And we've been talking with?
The Bearded Man.
The Bearded Man. Thank you, sir. So it's October 23rd, 2013. I'm outside of little Shanghai, across the street, actually, at Locust and Cedar, waiting for Dennis Etler,